This is episode 22 with Catherine Green and Nur Anissa.
Welcome to the Futures Intelligent Leadership Flowcast. This is your host, Tyler Mongan. I am the president of Haku Global. This is a space for globally minded experts to dialogue about the future of leadership with a focus on the key question, how can leadership be more intelligent about futures? From this conversation, innovative wisdom, practical tools, and actionable insights emerge to help future-ready leaders thrive in an uncertain, complex, and exponentially changing world. Let's jump in to the dialogue.
Aloha, and welcome to this episode of the Futures Intelligence Leadership Podcast. This is your host, Tyler Mongan, the president of Haku Global. Today's co-guests are Dr. Catherine Green and Dr. Nur Anissa. Catherine is the creator of Futures at Work. She is a seasoned foresight professional helping organizations explore the future, make strategic choices, raise institutional capacity to manage change, and execute on planned change, targeting a preferred future. She uses a cross-disciplinary approach, blending futures field with the behavioral sciences. Catherine helps her clients be prepared, not surprised. She uses a recognized six-step foresight process, enabling clients to solve pressing business, talent, and organizational challenges with tailored solutions for their future. Her work helps organizations identify change strategies that enhance success during the transitions and offers guidance on how to stay the course while pursuing a preferred future. Dr. Anissa is a senior teaching fellow at Strathclyde Business School. She graduated with a PhD in operations research and is a member of the Association of Professional Futurists. She helps organizations plan strategically and design and develop performance measurement systems. She uses foresight and scenario planning to help organizations go beyond just forecasting to the generation of preferred futures. Dr. Anissa created Futures Sandbox, an initiative for transformative action learning and youth development. The Future Sandbox is an independent, collaborative, and open platform for workshops, seminars, and hands-on projects to educate and inspire youth towards imagining and creating preferred futures. So I'm excited to have these guests today. The dialogue was very interesting and engaging, and very relevant to the current state and context in which we find the world in today. I think you'll find some really interesting gems in this dialogue, so let's have a listen. Aloha, Catherine and Anissa. Thank you both for joining me today on this episode. And as always, I want to start with this key question of how can leadership be more intelligent about futures, given uncertainty, complexity, and exponential change in the world? And I'd like to start with Catherine, if you could answer this from your perspective and your work.
Sure. Well, good morning, Tyler, and good morning, Anissa. Nice to have both of you with me this morning. When I thought about that question, Tyler, I had two streams of thought. One is that when I think about an intelligent leader from a lot of the work that I've done, is I find that leaders work from two domains. One domain is the world of trends and data and events, things that are tangible, knowable, and they're happening, and we watch them, and they're in the external world. And then the second domain tends to be, in a way, the internal world. Their visions for the future, their thoughts about it, their emotions, their intuition, their feelings about it. It's almost an internal world. So I find that really good leaders, who I feel are really intelligent leaders about the future, work from both domains. It's a blend. The second sort of relevant piece, I think, here, especially with the COVID-19 virus and a lot of the pandemic uncertainty, is that it's really helpful when leaders work with a range of futures. And for many people in the foresight field, that's a given. But when I introduce the idea, really what I help explain is that looking at a range of options about how the future might play out, there's a real benefit to the mind, and it helps in two very distinct ways. It lets the mind try on, in a safe setting, different options about the future without having an extreme response, but it makes it familiar. It makes a range of options familiar and knowable, And then secondly, it reduces sort of the shock factor so that when the real future, whichever emerges, then they're better prepared to take action, which is what we really look to leaders to do.
Hmm. Great. Thanks, Catherine. And sure. Anisa, from your perspective, how do you answer the question?
Well, hello, everyone. It's afternoon here for me in the UAE. So I was thinking when we talk about futures intelligent leaders, you know, it's been crazy, the recent publications everywhere on social media, you know, that so many articles that have been churned out by consultancy firms and everything. I mean, you could go a bit dizzy just reading them, right? So, yes. So like, then how would leaders then, what to pick up, right? Like, so much information. How do you then know what is right for you? So it's not a bad thing, really. I think being futures intelligent here means they have to be future prepared. They need to know how to have that level of information to be able to react quite quickly. And I guess it's how to do that. Yeah, like how do you gather this information? How do you process so much information, so much data that's around you to then guide your decision-making? And I like what Catherine had just said, like there are two domains, did you say, or dimensions?
Yeah, domains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, domains, internal and external. And as well, with the internal domains, I think emotional intelligence is another aspects, like, you know, like how people are reacting towards what is going on right now. I think it has a lot of social impact, and leaders, I think, will have to be quite sensitive towards how people are responding and reacting towards what's going on around them. So I think to be future intelligent, that's one another aspect that as a leader we have to be, or leaders ought to be aware of.
Kind of a follow-up, love to direct this to Catherine. It's, you know, with the amount of information and how it's changing so fast, there's a new report out, or there's a new data point, or there's a new decision that's made. You know, how can leadership within this like rapid change, how do they manage that? Like, I guess even from the inner, the outer, however you want to like look at it.
That's a good question. And yeah. Anis is absolutely right. I think the flood of recommendations by the part of consultants is very, it's overwhelming, I think, for a leader. There's a lot that was produced very quickly. I might just suggest that when I watch leaders work in sort of this white water environment, and this is an analogy I learned years ago, when leaders are working through turbulence, they're riding the white waters. They, what they learn to do, and this is an individual response to a lot of stimuli, a lot of data, a lot of events going on, is they end up sort of creating their own level of sensors where they're paying attention to certain things that matter to them specifically. Some of those things are very much what everyone else is experiencing, and some of the things are particular for their organization, their firm, their workforce, their line of work, their industry. So they have their sensors out to gather data specifically that they need. They'll still be familiar with what's going on. But like Anisa said, it's a lot of information to sort through. How do you know what to do for yourself? I think leaders get pretty good at figuring out which pieces of information they need in order for to be able to act.
Mm-hmm. And Anisa, any follow-up thoughts on that?
Yes. I mean, leaders, like if they have been in the industry, or they've been, you know, as a CEO or a managing director for a time, for, you know, with experience, they would know intuitively what is important for them. But being faced with the environment that, as you know, the current pandemic, you don't have any patterns to follow. Everything is new. So that would be a challenge, like, would I still rely on what I know? What I know before. Mm. This is what I find, like a lot of leaders or my clients that I work with, and we sit together and say, okay, let's think about, you know, how your company or how your organization would look like the next 20 years. They keep falling back to what they know. And I think, right? So being, I think being future prepared and having that foresight is crucial. And so people, like you would say, oh, you need to have foresight, but how do you do that? So, and a lot of my work help leaders scan the environment, look at what are the driving forces of change, emerging issues, and weaker signals in to develop scenarios. And the power of scenarios is that they are there for you to, you know, play with alternatives. Okay, what if this were to happen? And how, what kind of strategies then can I put it to work? And, you know, it just gave them the opportunity to explore different alternatives that might or could be happening. Again, very similarly, similar to what I've just said earlier. Now, there's just so many people producing all sorts of scenarios. I think the value added here would be the ability to use those scenarios and in supporting decision making, rather than creating your own scenarios, maybe, you know, looking at so many options out there, pick one that you feel, I think, you feel you can trust how they have developed the scenarios, apply them onto your sector or your industry, perhaps, and think about your strategies. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know, like Anissa was saying, how a lot of leaders will kind of default to the past. And it seems like we're in this space now where that becomes a real liability when you kind of do that, because the past just isn't really working anymore in some sense. But I know that at least the work I looked at is that the brain, it as a method of efficiency, for, you know, point of efficiency, is it likes to look back into the past first to recall what happened, and then make decisions, because it's just much easier. It actually takes a lot more energy to imagine something new, and it also takes a lot more risk. Anissa, how do you think leaders can imagine something new and be willing to take that risk?
Yeah. So when I was working with a group of administrators for higher education, so we were looking at, okay, in the next 10, 15 years, how do you want higher education to look like? Mm. And as you say, we like familiarity. We like to fall back to what we know, because that's comfortable. And funders love it because they have the model that they were successful before, and they know the funding would be, you know, it's going to be successful. We know it's going to be successful. But, you know, given the situation and think how things are changing, even without the pandemic, we were talking about how technology is moving so fast and higher education is just so hung up with the old ways of doing things, and things never change because leaders do not want to do something that they're not familiar with, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so how do we do that? I think a lot of the foresight methodologies that we normally introduce when we do workshops is just to get them to stretch their thinking, like using a futures wheel would get them to stretch thinking, you know, what are the impacts because of social distancing? How would it affect my institution or my organization or my company? And what is the consequence of that first order impact, and so on and so forth? So you kind of keep thinking of the consequences of the consequences, where you start to stretch your thinking further. And that gives you, I think, a handle of, you know, making a longer term decision, being broader and has more depth rather than, you know, too short sighted.
Great. And Catherine, thoughts, follow-up thoughts on that?
Well, I was reminded that Anissa used the words be future prepared early on when we were chatting. And I know that's a lot of the work she does, that the whole ability to think about the future just becomes a muscle, a mental muscle that you practice. So in some ways, having that as a baseline for leadership skill setting, be able to just integrate it just like we do everything else for basic leadership training, is the ability to use some really basic foresight principles about how to look at uncertainty, how to look at a future that hasn't happened yet, how to play with that, how to look at options, and especially, as Anissa said, how to look at the consequences, because that's really, it's the consequences that get leaders to pay attention or not pay attention. If it's a low consequence, it might fall off the radar. If it's a high consequence, it gets their attention. So the second piece I also thought about was, I often integrate the idea of values when thinking about the future. Mm-hmm. It becomes one of the factors along with it embedded in each of the scenarios. And the reason I say that is it's somewhat easy to create stories of the future in which we can integrate different outcomes, right? But what I find is when the values piece is added to that, so what are the one or two values that's really important for that organization or that firm or that leader? When you put the values overlay over the scenarios, then it becomes a richer, deeper exercise about outcomes. Mm. So again, I think it's going back to that two domain idea. You know, there's a lot of the external rational, but there's also an internal piece. Mm. So I think when you add values to your scenarios about the future, it makes it a little easier to navigate for some leaders. But I think Anissa's point about being skilled at looking mm-hmm. at the future is really important and extremely relevant.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's definitely one of the things that now leaders are just kind of turning to because they have to, right? All of a sudden, there's so much more foresight workshops and foresight summits, and people are looking for, you know, insights into the future, because it's like all the visions and all the plans they had are kind of changed now, right? And they don't right. know what to do. I really like the values piece. It's really interesting because when you look at the brain science around it, is values is one of the core contents of making a very conscious decision. Mm-hmm. And most people aren't aware of their values a lot of times, mm-hmm. but they're always going to be a part of the process. And so making those explicit, I think, is really important. And I'm kind of curious too, from both your perspectives, you know, it seems like in the past, maybe this is just one way to think about it, is that leadership kind of had a vision and they would just kind of drive through the noise and make that vision a reality. What do you think that approach still can work, or is that has to change? Anissa, what do you think?
Well, I think that vision still, like, you need to have vision. Vision here, mm-hmm. I think we can, in order for a leader to have a vision, I think they would need to know, Catherine has just mentioned, I think the underlying values of what mm-hmm. they are trying to perpetuate in their organization, I think that is just fundamental to everything that they do. And in order to have a vision, I think the scenarios would really help and help leaders in developing how they see their organization can flourish and what the future would look like for the organization, mm-hmm. I think. I think, yeah, using scenarios would be a good way in helping leaders develop a vision for their organization. Yeah.
And one follow-up question for you, Anissa. When you are working with leaders, or what you've seen from leaders, in this kind of climate we're in now, do you see them like still trying to gravitate towards that vision and wanting just to drive towards it? Or are they willing to be in this state where they constantly have to kind of pivot and adapt? What's kind of your sense of that?
This is interesting because I'm doing my MBA, mm-hmm. teaching my MBA course now on operations management. Mm-hmm. And we were looking at, how local businesses pivot very quickly in adapting mm-hmm. to, the mm-hmm. current situation. I have cases from Singapore and Kuala Lumpur where local farmers, they used to, reach out to companies to distribute the produce, but now they're going B2B, B2C, mm-hmm. right, mm-hmm. direct to customers, and they actually changed the whole logistics of how they reach out to households, to communities. And then we have how tailors were, before they were doing bespoke dresses for ladies, and they, because of the pandemic, they turned the whole operations into producing face masks for hospitals. So you know how they're so quick. In a way, I'm seeing like these organizations, they're really resilient, and they're not like, you know, really hung up with, okay, this is my vision, I'm gonna, you know, die with it. No, they really like, you know, they move, they're so quick to adapt, they're so agile in the things that they do, and they're so quick to just turn the operations within a few weeks, you know, just adapt and to survive, yeah, and even thrive, you know, not just surviving, but they're thriving. Yeah, that was what was amazing for me to see.
Yeah, I think that's happened a lot for a lot of companies. Catherine, your perspective on all that.
Well, I was I share Anissa's intense curiosity at watching companies respond, because this is a setting of a high degree of change. We don't often get to see what happens across industries when you've got this almost revolutionary level of change needed. Two or three of the things that jumped out at me is that I used to sometimes think that size was the issue about how quickly one could pivot, a firm or organization pivot. But I've read about very, very large companies pivoting quickly, as well as very small ones, like Anissa said. You know, they're selling B2C now, not A to A or B to B. They're moving down the supply chain and just connecting with customers further down. So I think the thing I've been intrigued about really is I'm going back to looking at the leader's ability to manage uncertainty. And it reminds me that some leaders get frozen when they can't and don't have the comfort level to move into a way of doing business that they've either never done before or never thought about before. Some leaders are more comfortable doing that, and they're willing to take some of that risk. And they're willing then to lead the whole organization, even out without the comfort of having a lot of certainty that it will work. But you've seen a lot of leaders step up to the plate, regardless of size, and pivot the company's output, really, in services and products very, very quickly without really knowing it might work. And so there's a kind of courage piece that I've seen inside organizations, and I like Anissa's concept of resilience, the confidence that as they pivot, it'll work. So I think there's a courage element here. It'd be really interesting to study it, because there's a lot going on right now around us by which we can really learn. And I think a lot of learning's going on for leaders and firms right now.
Anissa, any follow-up thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think because of what is happening, companies has got no choice. I mean, they can't say, no, I'm not going to change, and I'm just going to get hung up with what I always do and keep doing it. I think businesses do not have the choice anymore, which takes me to saying, like, why the pandemic has created is an opportunity for us to drive home the idea that, you know, people need to know there is another way of having a sense of agency in creating the world that you want, and not just, you know, feel like you're paralyzed, you couldn't do anything, you know. And yes, the pandemic is on us, and how do we then change and work towards having taking more responsibility for the actions that we're taking today, and that using that to drive towards a preferable future.
It's interesting how there's so many things that have changed so fast that people said we're going to take maybe years to change, or just, you know, or would never happen. But they're happening. And so I think it's interesting, Anissa, hinting at this idea that it gives leaders the opportunity to maybe take more risks and not fall back onto the side of that idea that things are going to stay stable, right? And I'm curious what you both think about with this future. Is it, you know, is it going to be that there's just constant change and leaders just have to deal with that? Is that what you're thinking, or curious what your thoughts on that are.
I think for a while, Tyler, I think there's, I'd almost say there's maybe two phases. There's one phase where we have a high degree of uncertainty and instability because it's just how the pandemic is working. It's global, it's affecting everybody on some level. So there's all these levels of adaptation going on for the moment. But I think there's a second moment coming, and I can't quite put a time phase on it, but maybe it's a couple of months, maybe it's the end of the year, maybe it's into next year. I think we don't quite know what settled down looks like yet, but there'll be another phase, and there'll be another level of adaptation, whether people feel that second phase is going back to more what it used to be, or whether it's adapting to this continual level of change. So I think there's two phases, and I think we don't really know. And I think leaders should be thinking about the possibility we don't settle down to a comfort level we had before the pandemic. The other piece I want to add, and it goes a little back to what Anissa was talking about opportunities for firms to flourish. I love that word, flourish. I often tell leaders, or when I work with them, that when you have this degree of change going on that is so intense, so big, so amazingly effective in a way, when the structures are so much challenged, that it's really from a change agent's viewpoint, this is the ideal time to create new structures because the resistance to change is so low. And Anissa referred to it. She said, we're fighting for our survival in a way. So you're forced to change. But from a change perspective, this is the ideal time to go after a preferred and ideal future because the resistance to it is so low. It's much easier and quicker to get there than it would be if things were not so upsetting.
Yeah, and I agree, Catherine, 100%. And I think futures intelligent leaders ought to be change agent. And this is, I think they have to grab this opportunity to, like, you know, implement all the change. Like, for example, what Catherine has just said, like structure has this, you know, this inertia here that, you know, resists change. And it's so difficult, right? And when you try to do something different, you get all sorts of resistance within the organization and even with your partners who collaborate with you wouldn't want you to see any change. But this is a great time if anything, I think a leader ought to be a change agent, and this is a really grab the opportunity to, you know, do all sorts of restructuring, take the risk to do it, and you have got no choice, you have to do it anyway. So, you know, what have you got to lose? Yeah.
No, I totally, it's very interesting. I know when you feel like your brain is very confused, you know, and you're in this kind of mental chaos, it's usually the point where you're learning something new, right? And you're changing. And so I think a lot of organizations and governments and leaders are kind of in that state right now. And also, like what Catherine was saying about the idea of there's going to be kind of these phases of a point of uncertainty for a while, but then it's going to move into some type of, you know, more stability at some point. And I think we see that I think a lot of times in our own physiology, where we are moving out of homeostasis, especially when we're trying to develop new skills, learn new things, and we move out of homeostasis and it feels uncomfortable, but then we actually find a new level of homeostasis, right? As we learn and grow. I think that's kind of, I mean, it's interesting to think about that being like on a global scale right now. What that could look like. And I would like to kind of start to wrap up here, respectful of time. And what I'd like to do is just kind of, if both of you could just share your final thoughts after this conversation. And I'd like to start with Anissa.
I think a lot of the points that we have touched on is really like, you know, leadership behavior or characteristics or the, you know, like the ability to change and adapt and to be emotionally intelligent, be aware of what's going on around you. I think all those are so important, so crucial. And being skilled, right? Catherine touched on the capability, the foresight muscle, if you like, I think to be future prepared, you need to have that skill, the skill set that allow you to or support your foresight capability to be able to detect and move quite quickly and in developing strategies to move forward. And I really like what Catherine mentioned just now, like the new normal. I mean, things are definitely not going to go back to what we know. There will be a new normal. We don't know what it looks like and how are we going to be comfortable with that. I mean, a lot of the things will stay with us. Like, for example, we now realize that working from home is an option. Before, before a lot of old school bosses would say that, you have to come to work, I have to see your face. But and so this opens up another level of opportunity. Like, you know, there are other alternatives to do the things that we have been doing. And that I think that creates a new, I think leaders ought to be aware of that. And I think a lot of agile leaders will be starting to think of, okay, what kind of opportunities does the new normal bring, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of, business thinking, I think. Yeah.
Great. Thanks, Anissa. And Catherine.
I'll just follow up that it's really, I think, an opportunity for a global lesson in change, and that we're all experiencing it on some level to some degree. I think for leaders, if they don't have prior foresight experience and training, there's no wrong way to do it right now. This is truly a learning experience. We'll do the best we can. There'll be some obvious leaders that will emerge, some obvious skills that will emerge as being important, some real winners in a way that will be important. I think it's just an extraordinarily opportunistic time to make some changes that works for the firm, the organization, based on values. And based on a preferred future, a shared future about where they want to land during this enormous time of change. And I think it's actually quite exciting. So if leaders can, as Anissa said, be sensitive to the emotions that people are feeling and the anxiety, but the real leadership skill is to project a confidence about the future, even though it's not known, and express confidence that they can lead them towards a future that people ultimately want. I think that's really where intelligent leadership is today. And I think it's exciting and it's a time for learning.
Great. Thanks, Catherine. And final question. This is going to be a little bit difficult, I'll be honest. I like to ask each guest to share one word that they want to leave future intelligent leadership. And so, Anissa, what is one word you'd like to leave?
One word. That's hard.
Yeah.
Weird.
Weird.
Yeah.
Great. It's a great word. I actually just saw a TED. I saw a TED talk today, and the guy he used the word weird to describe athletes who had special features about them that made them really good at a certain type of sport. Like polo athletes have long forearms, and good runners have much longer legs, right, than their torso. And that was how he used weird. So I think it's a good, interesting word to use. How do you use that word?
Me?
Yeah.
I was just thinking, like, you just have to, this is Jim Data's, think the second law, was it? He said that, ideas, weird ideas. I can't even quote it right now. I'm so nervous. But he did say something about, weird ideas are, all ideas are great or something like that. But he talked about weird ideas being, it might be weird. It sounds weird today, but it's not weird tomorrow. Mm. So, like of science fiction, it may be science fiction tomorrow. It's not science fiction. It's maybe science fiction today, it's not science fiction tomorrow. So, it could sound weird today, But if you take the risk and you are brave enough to have the courage and brave enough to do that, although it sounds weird, but you could, you know, emerge as a leader in the future where the situation isn't that normal anymore. I mean, the whole situation is weird, isn't it, right now? I mean, like, for me, I wanted to go to supermarket and I feel weird. I mean, I've never thought of having second thoughts of going out before, but now I'm like, going out? Seriously? It's just weird.
Great. Thanks, Anissa. Wow. And Catherine, your word.
Curiosity. Yep. Curiosity about the future.
Perfect.
I think when we're curious, we are willing to engage with ideas about the future that don't limit us and don't scare us if we're just curious. So if we remain curious about what could be, I think it sort of opens up our capacity to envision and think differently.
That's great. I love the combination. Don't be scared to be weird and curious.
Yeah. Ah, cool.
Yeah. Excellent.
So, thank you, Anissa and Catherine, for joining me again on this podcast. I really appreciate your time, your energy, and your wisdom.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes. Thank you, Tyler. Thank you, Anissa. Nice to meet you.
Thank you for joining us today on the Flowcast. To get a summary of today's dialogue, find out more about today's guests, listen to previous episodes, or discover more about Haku Global's neuroscience-based Futures Intelligent Leadership programs or customized strategic foresight and innovation sprints, visit us at www.haku.global. At Haku Global, we believe it is time for more Futures Intelligent Leadership. The future is something we need to think more intelligently and feel more deeply about so we can collaborate to discover today's solutions for future problems. If you are in a leadership role and need support or training to scale futures intelligence across your organization, then contact us at Haku Global. This is your host, Tyler Mongan, and until next time, have a preferred and conscious future. Aloha.